I've done this, this is my 101st time to do this presentation, and it's the only time I've worn two microphones. So it's a bit unusual. I got wires everywhere. Okay. Thank you again for being here. Thank you for allowing me to present this material. This is my favorite section to present. It's the one I started with many years ago, and I've kept it updated and a little bit added to it all the time. But it's one I originally called Electronic Battlefields, Your Child in Television. And back then, all we were really worried about 20 years ago when I started this was television. There are other things to be worried about now in addition to this, but it's still a relevant topic. The very first time I presented this at a church, which was about 12 years ago, one of the most elderly elder in that congregation, he walked up to me and he said, "Delton, I don't have to pay attention to anything you're saying. I've raised my kids and my grandkids, and I even got great-grandkids, and this doesn't relate to me at all, so I'm not going to pay attention." So I asked him in a very respectful manner. I said, "Brother, I got a question for you. As many grandkids and great-grandkids and whatever you got in your house, how many of those are in your house at any given time?" He said, "I got so many, there's somebody there all the time." I said, "Well, this applies to you, because you're still the patriarch of that home, and you still need to maintain some control about what's happening related to the media in your home." He listened to me, and I think he did it. But let's look at this. Now, this next slide, why did I did that? Because I always wanted to show pictures of my grandbabies. All right? Okay? Now she's now 7, but this is my favorite picture. That's what happened when a 2-year-old eats a lemon. Okay? All right? Not important. I just wanted to sneak those in. I've wanted to for years. So thank you for tolerating that. But grandchildren are part of what gives those of us who are grandparents and great-grandparents, it's part of what we're worried about. And that's the reason they're relevant. Now, again, as I mentioned this morning, we need to look at the moral side of this as well as the practical and technical side of this. Christ told us in Matthew chapter 6, verses 22 and 23, "The eye is the lamp of the body. So then if your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness?" You don't have to use your imagination very much at all to acknowledge that a lot of what we see on TV, and it's now darkness, a lot of what we see. We've become very, very accustomed to things. We're not bothered by things that we used to be bothered about. I can give you a whole long list of things that we were embarrassed or shocked when they came out on television. And I'm talking about the commercials, all right, not necessarily the television program. And so I still don't understand how some of you explain some of the commercials to some of your kids, all right? Don't know how you're going to do it. I'm glad I don't have to do it. Nevertheless, it's an issue. But Christ is telling us here that we need to take in light. Now, to give you an example of how conditioned we've been, and I'll speak a little bit later about being conditioned to this stuff, but one time the one of the primary researchers in the communication field, a professor at University of Pennsylvania, he took 30-second sections from each of the first 20 episodes of Law and Order. Now, this is the original Law and Order. Nothing like what we're watching right now, all right? And this was the cop show from now about 30 years ago. And he took a 30-second section from each one of those and put it into a sequence and put it together as a 10-minute video. Did you know if you watched that, you'd want to throw up when it was over with? Because it was that intense. It was that dark. What happens is when we see it over a period of an hour, we just sort of get used to it. But y'all do know, if you study this at all, that those things accumulate in your head. They don't go away. I've studied it. We don't forget. We may not be bothered by it right now, but it's still part of who we are from that point. And that's the reason we need to pay attention to what's going on. The psalmist wrote it like this: "How can a young man keep his way pure? By keeping it according to your word. With all my heart I have sought you. Do not let me wander from your commandments. Your word I have treasured in my heart, that I may not sin against you. Blessed are you, O Lord. Teach me your statutes. With my lips I have told of all the ordinances of your mouth. I've rejoiced in the way of your testimonies as much as in all riches. I will meditate on your precepts and regard your ways. I shall delight in your statutes. I shall not forget your word. There's an antidote to all the negative things that I've spoken about today, and it's God's word. We just don't pay enough attention to it. It's there. It will work. It will help us, and it'll help us grow closer to our Lord. Let's talk about television. There's a lot of good. Television's not inherently bad. There's a lot of good stuff there. There's a whole lot of mediocre, and there's a lot of bad there too. Now, I'm going to share some numbers with you, and I updated these about 6 months ago. They've probably changed. It's probably worse. But you're going to be surprised at the quantity of this. Now, sometimes when I'm speaking about these numbers, sometimes I'm talking about television time, and sometimes I'm talking about screen time. They're not the same thing. Television time literally means television. You know what television means? It means viewing something from afar. So if you're watching a video on your TV, you're not watching television, technically. Okay? You're watching a video, which is not television. So most of the numbers that I'm talking about when it says television mean television. That means it's something live off of the networks or the satellite or the cable. Okay, what are you missing? Now the reason, let's see what this looks like. Yeah. The reason, I've been to this place. I don't know how in the world they pulled up that TV and that chair to that cliff in the Buffalo River National Forest, National River in Arkansas. But it took me a mile and a half hike to get there. All right. The idea here is that this young man has this wondrous beauty before him. And what's he pay attention to? Pay attention to his television. An irony there. What are we missing by so much television? And most of these numbers that I'm speaking of are just as relevant for adults as they are for our children, especially our older adults. I think it shows up in a few minutes, but the two groups that watch the most television are those 6 and under and those 60 and older. And the 60 and older watch just as much television as those 6 and under. Why? Those are the two groups that are generally not in the workforce or going to school. The young and the older are the groups that watch the most. The average person watches 5 hours of TV per day. Average. Up from 4 hours 10 years ago. It went up. I was really surprised to find that out this year when I did my research. The quantity has gone up. This is television, not screen time. 67% of Americans always or often view television while eating dinner. That went up from 40% 10 years ago. This is not getting better, y'all. Okay? All right? It's getting to be more of an issue. 56% of children ages 8 to 16 have a TV in their bedrooms. We're going to talk about that. I'm a strong advocate against that, and I'll tell you why. 70% of daycare centers use a TV, and the average American youth, look at this number, spends 900 hours per year in school and over 1,200 hours per year watching television. And that probably is really screen time, not just television. But they spend more time in front of a screen than they do in school, on the average. 55% of young adults admit to going to bed late because of television. And one of the interesting, because this is my field, one of the interesting things is things really do change. The average American sees a million TV commercials by the time they're 55 years old, half of what it was 10 years ago. Okay, somebody give me the initials that tell me why we're only not watching as many commercials. Starts with a D. DVR. I love it. Okay, we have a DVR. All right. I never watch the commercials anymore. And mine doesn't automatically go through them. I have to fast forward through them, but I don't watch commercials anymore. So things do change. We don't watch as many TV commercials. And that is the reason so many more of the stations, for those of you that are concerned about this, so many more of the networks are going to things like CBS moved to All Access recently in order for you to pay for your television. Talk to me about that if you're interested in that. That's a very interesting concept that's happening. Now, this is true, and this they redid this study, and it held up the second time. 54% of 4 to 6-year-olds, when asked, would rather watch TV than spend time with their dads. That's how powerful television is. Humorous statistics. In the U.S., it is more likely to have a TV than a bathroom, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Okay. The average number of TVs in a house are 2.24. The average home has more than two. And 65% of all the households in America have three or more. That's a lot of TVs. And part of this is because televisions have gone down in price compared to income a lot lately. They're relatively inexpensive thing to buy now compared to what they used to be. 56% of Americans pay for cable TV. That includes satellites and things of that nature. 6 million videos are rented per day. That's up because we now rent them on, what is it, Redbox at every McDonald's in the world. All right. They're all there. And 49% of us Americans admit that we watch too much television. Now, I really don't, because I don't have my hearing aids in and I really can't hear you, I'm not going to handle this as I really should, which is listen carefully for your answer, all right, because I can't hear you. So let's go over this, though. And if you talk loud, if you know the answer, speak loud enough, I'll hear you, all right? First question, at what age do children begin imitating behaviors they see on TV? Is it when they're 14 months old, 2 years old, or 3 years? 14 months. Yeah, I knew you'd all know that one. If you've had grandkids at all, you know that. I've got a 2-year-old grandson that he can operate the television, all right? He can operate any phone. He can make any phone do anything we want it to do. He even one time took my phone. I let him have it for 1 minute, and he moved every single date on my year-long calendar to the day before, okay? I don't know how to fix that. I literally had to go rechange every date in my phone because he had every date on there to the day before. And that messes up somebody like me, all right? Okay, the answer, of course, is 14 months. Now, this is a more interesting one. When are children exposed to the most violence on TV? Is it during prime time or the cartoons? It's the cartoons. Now, I have to be careful. I sort of misquote this statistic, but I'm going to try to give it to you as honestly as I can. They keep up with the most violent movies at any given time that are out. And a long time ago, the most violent movie for one particular month was one of my favorite movies, Red Dawn. All right? It's a World War III movie, a bunch of kids in Colorado who save America. All right? It's a really, really good movie. But it was listed as the most violent movie in the theaters at that time because of the quantity of violence. We're not talking about intensity, quantity. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles took it over the next month. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles took it over as the quantity of violence. That was taken over by Kill Bill, which is a really bad movie. All right, that'll give you an idea of the quantity of violence there. And for our little kids, quantity is just as significant as depth of that violence and intensity of that violence. So cartoons, and I used to say cartoons on Saturday morning. There is technically no such thing as cartoons on Saturday morning anymore. All right, about 2 years ago, they did away with the last of that programming. Why? Because you got the cartoon channel and about 40 other channels on a satellite that you can find something related to cartoons. Media experts say that parents should limit screen time to how many hours per day max? Anybody want to guess?
1 to 2
is what the experts say. I say more power to you if you think you got the authority to do that, all right? Okay? I don't think anybody can do it. I think you're welcome to try, all right? Because your child is going to get video at school. They're going to get videos of some sort at their neighbor's house. They're going to get it on somebody's phone. They're going to get it in the car driving down the road. The answer is 1 to 2 hours. But I think if you can keep it to 2 to 3 hours, you're doing really good. Because what's the average? 5. All right? So try to keep it to 2 to 3, and you're doing better than normal. All right? I'm not saying 1 to 2 is not bad. You really should try. But in today's world, that's going to be real close to impossible. What are the documented effects of over 4 hours of screen time? Now, we're talking about screen time now, not television time. Screen time includes their phone, the video, games, everything. Increased risk of obesity, increased adult use of drugs and alcohol, or lower reading scores? What do y'all think the answer is?
All
of the above. You got it. All right. And we're going to talk about some of that research in just a moment. Okay, now this is, another good one. How should parents help their children consume media products responsibly? Tell them of what you approve and disapprove, and watch TV with them, and explain things to them, or all the above. All the above, yeah. We'll talk about this more in a little bit as well. Now, here's my favorite. What is the youngest age? No, that's not it. The next one's my favorite. But this, we'll cover this one. What is the youngest age a child should start using a computer?
Five
is what I hear some of you say. The experts actually say three. Why? Because they're going to get daycare a lot. If they're in daycare, and a lot of our kids are in daycare, they will get access to a computer. I don't agree or disagree with that. I'm just telling you what the experts say. Now, here's the one that's my favorite. When do they become consumers? At infancy, when they can't talk, okay? Or 3 years old or 5 years old? Somebody guess. I can't hear anybody. It's B. Okay, 3 years. True story. I love this story. My next door neighbor, I lived in a duplex there at the children's home. And my next door neighbor had a son that just turned three. And he bought an action figure for his son for his third birthday. He took it to him, handed him the gift, and his response as a three-year-old was, "Daddy, where are the rest of them?" Because he knew from television that he only had a piece of that set. So yeah, your kids are aware of, even a three-year-old is aware of that, all that marketing that's on television. Now, serious question. How many of you use your V-chip? How many of you use your V-chip? How many of you use your V-chip? I know it, and that's a problem. Okay? All right. In 2002, might have been 2000, President Clinton signed a law into effect that said every television 13 inches and older, or over 13 inches or bigger, from that point forward had to have a V-chip in it. What a V-chip does, it gives you the ability to program your television that certain program ratings will not play, certain shows will not play, certain networks will not play. You can program your television. Now, if any of you had raised your hand, now y'all, this is my 101st time to do this, okay? If any of you raised your hand, you'd have been person number 10. Out of 100, I got one back there. I got number 10. All right. Y'all, it's there. This is the federal government's excuse for putting trash on your TV. Because you've got the ability to cut it off. Now, why do none of you know about it or none of you use it? Mostly because you got to read the owner's manual. And we dads and men will not read the owner's manual. All right? That's the last thing we're going to do. But it's there. I really don't expect anybody to go jump at it, go home and play with their V-chip. All right? But you need to know it's there. And if you don't, even if it's a satellite system or a cable system, they also have their own systems built in. Now, I want you to catch what I'm saying here. The reason you have so much trash on your television is because the government gave you the ability to take it off. And we just don't do it. If TV is less than 17 years old and 13 inches, and Walmart, from day one, put it in their televisions that were even less than that. That's your television price went up $15, because that's what these V-chips cost to put in their television. Okay? If it's smaller, it probably has one, and your satellite or cable box probably has one, and no, you're not using it. I've never used mine either, all right? I know it's there, but I haven't had kids at home since I learned this. A few more TV facts, then we'll get to some more statistics. In 1950, 10% of the homes had TVs. By the 1960s, it was 90%. 2005, last time the figures were added up, it was 99%. More common than telephones and toilets. 54 to 56% of children have TVs or monitors in their bedrooms, and that doesn't count their smartphones. Now, I'm going to get personal about this for just a moment. Your child should not have a TV or monitor in their bedroom. Your child simply should not have a TV or monitor. True story. The second presentation I did was at a big church in Fort Worth. One of the elders' wives came up to me afterward. She says, "I got a story I got to tell you. I'm the nurse at a dentist office, and one of the elders' wives brought their six-year-old son in to visit me at the doctor's office a few weeks ago. Let's call him Johnny. I asked little Johnny, I said, 'Johnny, what do you do in your spare time?' Six-year-old Deacon's kid, okay? All right. He says, I like to watch TV. What kind of TV do you like to watch? Quote, I like to watch those naked women late at night. That's what happens when a child has showtime in their room at 2 o'clock in the morning. All right? Be careful. Now, this next one's going to sound a little bit elitist, but I'm going to tell you anyway. There's been studies about TVs and bedrooms related to the educational level of the parents. Now, bear with me. There's a difference between causation studies and correlation studies. Causation studies says A happened and B happened, and that caused C. Correlation studies say that this happened and this happened, and this was the not necessarily representative result, but it says something. With that said, study after study has been done, and they found out that the better educated the parent, the less likely the child was to have a TV in their bedroom. Better educated the parent, the less likely the child was to have TV in the bedroom. Why? Because it means they studied it a little bit. They've looked at it. They see the downside of the television in the bedroom. Now, the very first time I did this, the minister called me over later. He said, Delton, what's the difference between a television and a monitor? And I need to be fair and tell you there is a difference. If your child has a monitor in the room, that means they don't have access to stuff coming in. They don't have access to the satellite or the cable or the networks, if you still have networks, all right? He said, I have a monitor, and I have the ability to completely control what's on that monitor. That is a good compromise. Still, you may end up with too much screen time, but at least you have the ability to control what's on there. So television is what's bad in the room late at night, not necessarily a monitor, if you're controlling what your child is watching. More TV facts. 994 out of each 1,000 studies, there's been about 4,000 studies done, related to whether violence on television causes violence in our children. And y'all, it does. It does. We've argued this. When I first started in communication studies, which was in 1977, we were arguing this and we were arguing and we couldn't come to any conclusions. Well, they've now done about 4,000 studies and they've come to some solid conclusions. But the very first study that is documented tells you everything. It's called the Bobo Doll Study. It was in 1966, and what they did is they took a bunch of six-year-old boys, and they had half of them watch aggressive cartoons that had a lot of violence in them. Then they had half of them watch very passive cartoons that didn't have any violence in them. Then they put them all in one of these big rooms with one of these bow-up Bobo dolls. Now, for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, sand filled in the bottom, they're inflated, similar to your inflated Santa Clauses, all right? And they put it in the little room, and they filmed to see what happened. Oh, duh! The children that watched the violent cartoons beat up the Bobo doll. And those that didn't. Okay? How much of a genius does it take to figure that one out? But we act like it would take geniuses to figure that out. Our children will imitate what they see on television. All but 16 out of these 4,000 studies indicated that there is a problem. And every major medical organization, I have a whole sermon on this one, every major medical organization in this country has signed on the dotted line that violence in television and movies causes violence in our children. Not we think it causes it, but does cause it. So be aware of what your children are watching. And video games are now a big culprit on this as well. Video games are actually more damaging because of the intensity or more damaging than television or movies. Perhaps many of us are apathetic about this, we as adults. We're quick to dismiss the influence of television. One of the doctors at the University of New Mexico Medical School, he wrote, perhaps many adults are quick to dismiss the influence of television because they do not want to admit that they too have been influenced by it. Has TV been a part of my life? Y'all know how old I am. I've told you a bunch of times. All right. I asked my mom, I said, Mom, when did we get our first TV? Now, I was born in October of 1954. Mom said, we got our first TV in January of 1955. So how much of my life have I done without a television? The first 3 months. All right. Okay. Wasn't watching it then anyway. TV is something I don't want. I don't want someone telling me what I should watch and what I don't watch. And that's one reason we as adults are so apathetic about this. Especially the men. The men are even more so about this than the women. And a lot of these issues do have to do with gender. Christ told us, if your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you, for it's more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell. He's simply telling us we need to be careful what we take in. And that's what the problems with television still remain. The next three slides have to do with the primary issues related to those 4,000 studies I was talking about a while ago. The first group of effects, these are the proven effects. Increased aggressive behavior. We talked about that. If your child watches aggressive television, he or she may become more aggressive. But it also, just like I was talking about the television commercials a while ago about products, we become apathetic about it. We get desensitized about it. And that's what happens with our children. If they watch so much of this, especially in video games, if they watch so much of this, they get where they think the violence is normal. And that's when we have the problems. There's a statistic out there that some people say we shouldn't repeat. It is that in every single school shooting, as far as recently as a year ago, I haven't checked since then, every single school shooting by a teenage boy started with video games. Every one of them. All right? And that's not me talking. That's the researchers talking. It started with that excess violence in video games. Y'all, that's scary. It means that we have the responsibility as adults to take some control of that. Of course, we become desensitized. We begin to think that things are normal. There are some programs that we watch on television now, and I watch about 6 hours a week, maybe. I have my favorite programs. And they're all cop, CIS, NCIS is my favorite. Okay, all right. NCIS LA is my second favorite. Okay, NCIS whatever is my third favorite. Okay, all right. But we have become desensitized to the level of violence in those. Now on some of these programs, they have autopsies all over the place, all right? Bodies torn apart, and we just sort of ignore it and go about our business, all right? That's how desensitized we've become. But what happens is we and our children begin to accept that violence is normal. And when we do, we have problems because we become complacent about that. Now, one that I didn't know about until I started this study was what they call the mean world syndrome. This is an increased fearfulness and increased belief that the world is as dangerous as the television world. I found one interesting statistic that said that if we died as quickly in real life as we do on television, the world would be depopulated in 28 days. Okay? There's a lot of shooting and death on television. And if you watch a lot of it, okay, another one of my favorite shows, I'll admit it, I'm honest here, y'all, is CSI Miami, all right? I have them recorded on my DVR, all right? If you watch that show a lot, you're offered a job in Miami, are you going to take it? No, because you're going to be convinced you'll be dead on day three, all right? Because that's how quickly they die on that show. It always starts off with a murder, all right? Increased belief of the world, if you watch too much of this. And what they really did is they went to the initial study was in the projects in Chicago. And they looked at kids who never left their neighborhood and what their perspective was on the world. And if you never leave your neighborhood, you go to school two blocks down the road, you go to the grocery store one block down the road, and so on, you begin to think that the outside world is a bad place if you watch too much television. How do we protect our children? Number one, pay attention to the programs your children watch and watch some of them with them. If your child is watching 5 or 6 hours of TV per day and you've got a job and other things that you have to do, you're not going to be able to watch that much television. But you need to watch some of it with them. You need to know what they're into. And so watch some of it. Set limits about the amount of time that they spend with the television. Just make a conscious decision that this is how much. And after a while, I've talked to parents that have tried this. After a while, your kids get used to it. And they learn to do other things like go outside, all right? And there's a book that I strongly promote. It's called Last Child in the Woods. Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder. That's really the name of the book, okay? It's a fantastic book about how even if you live in the city, how to get your child outside. I have a reading list that I'll send your minister. I have a reading list that was in the presentation this morning, and I just went through it too quick. But it's listed there as well. Set limits on the amount of time. Point out that although the actor has not actually been hurt or killed, such violence in real life results in pain or death. I want to spend some time on this one. If your child watches Wile E. Coyote get squashed by a 10,000-ton boulder and then crawl out from beneath that boulder, what does it tell that three-year-old? That a 10,000-ton boulder is not going to hurt you, all right? Or a person gets shot on television and comes back the next week in the rerun. What does that tell a three-year-old? That shooting wasn't really bad. Let me get real serious here for a moment. I live in Texas. We have 5.4 guns per house. And that's not an exaggeration. The average Texas home has 5.4 guns. My wife is anti-gun, and I've got five. All right? I inherited them all. All right? But the problem we have is with all these weapons in our homes, and California's pretty high on the list on number of guns, too. Y'all just have to register yours, or we don't. All right? But the problem is if a child sees all these things happen on television and somebody gets shot and hurt and then they're back the next day, it tells a 3 or 4 year old that that's not dangerous. And it is. So not only do you need to properly secure any weapons you have, but you need to tell your child that if you stab me and I bleed, I'm really hurt. You jab me with that pencil and I bleed, I'm really hurt. If you throw that rock at me, it's really going to hurt. And I'm not going to be okay. Tell the little ones that. They have to be told, is what the social scientists are telling us. They have to be told that those things are bad because they see so much that happens that's not permanently bad by watching television. Number four, refuse to let children see shows known to be violent, change the channel, or turn off the TV when something offensive comes on with an explanation of what is wrong with the program. You need to watch television with your children. You're not going to be able to completely and all the time avoid inappropriate content. You can't do it and watch television. But you do need to take control of it. My funniest statistic is this. Who's got the remote control in their hand 94% of the time? If the whole family's sitting there, who's got the remote control in their hand 94% of the time? Dad. That's right. I didn't make that up either. All right? It's true. Even when I started looking for videos of remote controls, every one of them, I mean, not videos, but the photographs to put in this, every one of them was the dad, all right? If you're sitting there watching TV with your children and something bad comes on and you stop it, mute it, pause it, whatever you want to do, what do you have then more than any other time in your child's life? Their attention. Why? Because they know until you get through, you're not going to turn it back on. Use that for what it's worth. The best learning tool we have for media and our children is the remote control. So use it for what it's worth because your children will listen to you. And as I said this morning, our children act like they're not listening, but they are. All right? I was serious when I said my children can quote everything I've ever said. All right? Good and bad. They can quote every bit of it. Did they act like they were listening? Did they act like they cared? No. Will your child act like they're listening or act like they care? No. Are they hearing you? Yes, they are. Why? Because you're the primary person. They're concerned about what you think, that they're concerned about what they think. So use the remote control. This really, really works. Okay? Use that remote control for what it's worth. But don't make it a power struggle. Don't do it just because you can. Do it because it's the right thing. Disapprove of violent episodes in front of the children, stressing the need that such behavior is not the best way. And finally, to offset peer pressure among friends and classmates, contact other parents and agree to enforce similar rules. Went to the video store when we were house parents at a children's home. Went to a video store with my teenage boys, and one of them walked up to me and he said, Delton, can I get this video? I looked at it. It was R-rated. I said, no, you can't get that video. He said, there's nothing wrong with it. I've seen it 7 times already. All right. Where had he seen it? He lived in my house. He had seen it at his neighbor's house over and over and over. He liked it. He wanted to watch it again. If your child is going to somebody else's house, this is what I recommend. Talk to the parent and tell them that these are where I put the standards at. I don't like my children to play this level of video game. I don't like my children to watch PG-13 movies, whatever it is that you're concerned about. Do that. Two things may occur. Number one, they may listen to you. They might not. But if nothing else, since we're always trying to start religious discussions with our neighbors, It's an excellent opportunity, and I've seen this done. It's an excellent opportunity to talk about basic morality and why you feel that way. It may even lead to them coming to church with you. So take advantage of that difference that you have and use it to the benefit of the church and our Lord. I'm going to talk very quickly about the rating system. Why? Because most of you, if you don't use your V-chip, you probably don't know anything about the rating system. Every program, almost every program, has to have a rating. But the reason I'm looking at this is because we all deal with different problems with different children. And if you know what that rating system means, it will help you determine what programs your child should or should not be able to watch. The first four levels are basically GTV. You might not know that there's actually four versions. There's TVY, that means it's for every kid. TVY7, 7-year-olds and up. Y7FS, that's for fantasy violence. That's, you know, in my days that would have been Superman and Batman. All right, stuff like that. Power Rangers and so on. And then there's TVG. Now, what's the difference between TVG and the rest of them? TVG means you're probably, as an adult, not going to be bored to death. All right? And all the rest of them are made for kids. And you may not really want to watch little kid programming. But TVG means that it's made for kids and adults, and it means it really is more a matter of the type of program it is. So TVG is like your typical Disney movie. Almost all of them are TVG or Disney program. PG, when they will never give you that PG rating without telling you why it got the PG rating. Either it will have a VS or D or VS or whatever combination. It means that if it's got a V, it got it for violence. If it has an S, it got it for language. If it has a D, it got it. I mean, S is for strong language. D, some suggestive dialogue. That's just their code for sex. All right? So D is for sex, S is for language, and V is for violence. It goes up a notch when you get to TV-14. The violence has now become intense. The sexual situations are intense, and the dialogue is more intense. If you have a TV-14 movie, a TV-14 on television that's a VSL, it is very well the equivalent of an R-rated movie. All right? Very close. TV-MA is your true R, almost to X-rated movie. TV-MA is, like I was talking about a while ago, where the little boy talked about the naked women late at night. Okay, he was watching TV-MA. Graphic violence, strong sexual activity, and crude language. And that's the strongest you will find on television. Okay, movie theater, it changes, but that's the strongest you'll find on television. The writer of Proverbs told us, train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Or as Paul said, do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. I want to thank you for caring for your children and grandchildren. I'm going to open up for questions now. If you have a specific one you want to ask me later, I'm going to the meal you're having, and speak with me there. But I will do what I can to answer any question you might have. Oh, I better stay here. Just holler real loud.
I can do that.
Okay.
My concern is when children are at such a young age where their brains are starting to develop what?
When children are at such a young age and their brains are developing, has there ever been any studies done to determine what kind of damage too much TV does to a child who are in those very important years of development of their brain?
There hasn't been very many studies related specifically to that development related to television. There has been a tremendous number of studies related to cell phones and other internet technology. They just skipped past television, went straight to the internet. What they have found out is because, and there's a lot of studies, and it basically says that our children's brains are wired together differently. It is significant. You can actually see it on the chart. When they show the photographs of a kid that's always watched a tremendous amount of screen time and video time and so on compared to a child that hasn't, and it has to do, more to do with anything else, with the length of the connections. Because everything is so quick and fast in the 7-second segments on almost any form of video, their brain is used to short spurts. Not that it's making it almost impossible for them as easily to do long-term analytical thinking. They simply are not wired for it. So yes, study after study has shown that our children are different, especially the millennials and that new group I was talking about, the I generation. Their brains aren't wired together the same as ours. My wife tells me I shouldn't put it that way, but y'all, that's what's happened. Their brains are literally wired together in a different sequence than most of the rest of us. It's not good, or it's not bad, but it's definitely different. Okay.
As far as you know, can you program your phones or the Fires, the Kindle Fires for content? Phones and the little iPads and all that stuff?
I have five of those. I don't know. Okay. All right. She asked if the Kindle Fire could be programmed. My guess is no. My guess is that the technology has not gotten there. Okay. Kindle's not too worried about it yet. All right. My guess is not. Okay. On the phones, you can probably buy apps that'll program the phone. Okay. You can probably get anything you want on a phone, but not on a Kindle. Okay. Yeah.
Is there a correlation between the increase of ADD in children or ADHD
to the amount of television?
Okay.
Yes, yes. There's study after study that says that ADD and ADHD are primarily caused by, some studies say they're the primary cause by technology, all right, more than anything. Y'all, do you know that the experts, I'm trained in lots of various marketing, and the marketing concept, the one axiom, is never go past 7 minutes, all right? Why? Because when I would watch the Popeye cartoons when I was a kid, they were 7.5 minutes, all right? Our attention span, even my generation, our attention span is programmed at 7.5 minutes, almost consistently, all right? And it doesn't change from generation to generation. And that 7.5 minutes is shorter for the younger generations because of the technology changes. Next.
There are apps. I have three of them at the house. I don't know what they are off the top of my head.
You say there are apps available for that?
That you can put on your tablet or your computer or your phone, but mostly tablet and phone. It runs in the background. Your kid doesn't even know it's there. You go to your computer, and you can see what they've looked at on their phone.
Yeah, thank you. I knew that, and
some of those are free. Some of them are cost, but they are there. I've got three if...
Y'all, what are we, 50 miles from Silicon Valley? Okay, something like that? Believe me, if it's needed, somebody has already invented it. All right? We just got to find out who has it. Okay. I've never looked for a product on the Internet related to any of this that wasn't there. Somebody has invented it. If you can think of it, somebody's invented it. Who knows how much you might have to pay for it, but it's there. So thank you. I appreciate that. Because, yes, the technology is all there, but the thing is that sometimes it takes a while before it becomes popular within the overall culture. And that's, I think, what we're speaking of there. Thank you. Over here.
How do you keep your children and family members from thinking that you have great animosity when you are controlling the time and what type of video games to play? You know, I don't want my children to be like angry or frustrated because I'm trying to crunch their time. So if they become angry with me, what's the best way for me to deal with that?
I understood most of that, but I think I know what you're getting at. I was speaking with someone else earlier today. There is we have a problem in that sometimes we've already lost control. Okay, all right. It's not easy to get it back, but it is possible. On that reading list and I'm not an expert on that because I haven't actually had to do it myself. But there, in one of the books that's on my reading list, it's by Gloria De Genato, something like that. It's one of the five books on my reading list that I'll make sure that you get a copy of. It specifically covers that topic more than any other book that I found. It covers the topic of regaining your parenting identity. And it basically it's real touchy-feely. It's real, you know, a lot of self-analysis, analysis of your children and so on. But I do believe the method would work if it's diligently carried out. And so look for that. I give him the list. Look for that. Buy it on Amazon. It's not new, but it's very, very good. Glorio De Genito is something about parenting well in the media age. That's the name of it. Parenting well in a media age. And it's available on Amazon. I recommend that. I'm sorry I can't give you a better answer because that's a hard one. That's a real hard one. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a two-part question, but it's related. If your child's watching TV later at night, has there been any studies or anything you're aware of where, A, it can cause nightmares, and B, it can ruin their ability to sleep effectively by shutting down their melatonin or whatever it is? You know what I mean, right?
Yeah, but I haven't
seen the blue light and all the violence or whatever it is that's going on.
I'm aware of that, but I haven't actually seen or studied anything on that.
Thanks.
It's just I just haven't got that far. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. This is kind of a loaded question, I guess.
All right.
15 years ago or so, I was working with some folks from Hollywood, and they told me that the what we'd call the B and C level companies like Lionsgate, their first filter on a movie was they'd put it in fast forward, and if something violent didn't happen every 5 minutes, it was out the door.
Do I believe that to be true? Yeah.
But that leads to the question is, you know, when we've decided to show movies here, we've had to spend hours looking for safe movies to show, and then even, you know, Disney is not safe anymore. You have to preview them before you show them to a church audience. Is there some sort of a list of, if you will, safe production companies?
I'm not an expert on that, but I would tell you where I will go first for the most dependable reviews is, bear with me, Something in the Family. What's the focus on the family? I watched their review of a movie that came out this week. What's the big movie that everybody's talking about? I don't remember. I can't remember the name of it. But anyway, it's supposed to be a family-oriented movie. It's big on the screens. I watched their review of it, and I appreciated their honesty. And they said that this movie covers this and this and this, and all this is really good, but the couple were still living together before they got married, and things like that. All right? They did an honest review of it. If I was just going to look for movies, I would look at their site first. That's a good place to start. All right? But as he mentioned a moment ago, basically you're going to have to watch it. And you're not going to find, I don't think you're going to find an innocent movie that's not G-rated anymore. You're not going to find an innocent movie that your kids are going to want to watch, besides possibly Disney. All right? And even Disney has one or two PG-13 movies. And Disney now owns Star Wars too. All right? Okay. All right. Anybody else?
We needed to hear from the west side over here, so.
I think if families were to limit TV to family time and set a specific amount of time, and then as a family choose what they watch, you would have a whole lot more control and there would be a lot less violence and sexuality being watched by the children.
Thank you for bringing that up. That's in a former version of this that I simply dropped for time, a whole section on that very topic. So thank you. What he's saying there is, if you want to do this right, you'll sit down as a family early in the week or the week before sometime and decide not only how many hours of television you're going to watch as a family, but also determine what programs you're going to watch and a compromise. Because there's going to be sometimes you want to watch what you want to watch, and sometimes your kid wants to watch what they want to watch. And rather than watching twice as much television, you watch whatever everybody else is watching. When I was actually in charge of teenage boys at one of the children's homes, I used that as a tool to get compliance or to get them to be good. I would say, if you do this and this and this, you get to pick what we watch on Friday night at 8 o'clock. All right? And that kind of, that's power. For a kid, that's power. All right? And they like that. So take advantage of that compromise side of this as a family. But it also will limit, it will cause you to automatically limit how much time you're watching. And you'll spend time doing other things. So thank you very much for bringing that up. I used to talk about that a lot, and somehow it got dropped. Anyone else?
Yeah, I have one.
Yeah.
Did you address anything about the subliminal seduction that the media prompts?
Okay, you're going to have to get my microphone a little closer.
Yeah, the subliminal that the media puts in all the movies and TV things. Like, you see a lot of the, like, Bryan Singer from Marvel, he's been known to do some gay kind of things, and he kind of runs that whole, like, the X-Men movies, he's the top dog in that.
Sorry, I don't understand what you're saying. Okay.
Subliminal seduction.
What's that?
Subliminal seduction.
Subliminal. You want me to talk about subliminal? Okay. Is it there? Yes. Is it as powerful as they say it is? No. Okay. I've studied this. He's talking about subliminal where they put things in funny little ways. Most famous is Aladdin. Okay. All right. Aladdin. They're really there. Those subliminal issues are really in Aladdin. Do I really think they're going to affect you? No. You know, it says if you play this backwards, it'll say something weird. All right. Is that there? Yeah. All right. Why? Because some people were having fun that day. All right. And they put it in there. Do I think it affects you? No. I don't think your subconscious catches the ability to roll that backwards or those other subtle things. Subliminal is in there. I've studied a lot of subliminal advertising. It's there. Is it as powerful as they say it is? No, in my opinion. It's there. And it's fun. It's fun to look at. But I don't think it's powerful. I don't think it affects our children. They're not paying that close attention.
Is live TV sports, NFL, for example, or NBA, is that violent because, you know, there's contact, people are getting knocked out or whatever?
I don't have any trouble. I'm not a sports person. I haven't watched but four football games in my life, okay, on TV. I can tell you which four they were over 35 years, all right? But to answer your question is I haven't heard any complaints about that violence itself. It's no. The problem with football is the commercials. The problem with football is the commercials. Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously, that is the number one area of complaint is football because of the things they're advertising. And I won't even bring them up in church. All right? So, yeah, the problem is the commercials. My single biggest complaint about television is football game commercials. Yes?
Should Christian play video games where they're shooting and killing people all the time?
Say it again. Say it for
us. Should Christian play video games where they're shooting and killing people?
Okay. She wants me to respond to first-person shooter games is the term for that. It's now about 10 or 12 years old study by, I forget the guy's name now. He did a study in which he looked at first-person shooter video games and how much they were causing some of the violence we have among our children. And it was part of those 4,000 studies that I mentioned earlier. There's absolutely no question for those that have studied it that first-person shooter games increase the level of violence that our children are willing to accept. Okay, I am a strong, I don't think we should allow our children to play first-person shooter video games. Because they're teaching them to kill. You're desensitizing them to death is what you're doing. And that can't be good. There's no way that desensitizing our children to death can be a good thing. So that's a study all to itself. We could spend hours on that topic. I used to spend an hour on it. And it concerns me because it's just part of what's making the world a more difficult place. So thank you for bringing it up. Yes.
This isn't a question so much as it is, there's a couple of families that I know of, and one of them put in a pool when their child was 12 or 13 so that when they were in high school, they would have a pool for the teenagers to be at their house rather than someone else's house so that they could control what they were exposed to and where they spent their time and how they spent it.
Yeah.
And that worked for them. And another example was they would have the kids come over, and that was kind of like a She was kind of like a den mother, mm-hmm. where she kind of tried to make it. They'd play games with the kids would come over to their house and they'd play games. They'd have snacks. You know, they'd have a movie that they'd watch. So they kind of controlled the environment.
Yeah.
And the kids gravitated to there because of the fun aspect or whatever.
Yeah, what you're suggesting is an excellent idea if we're willing to be proactive enough to do it. And that is to basically think about taking your home and making it a safe place. Our kids, more than anything, are looking for a safe place to go to. They know what safe is. And so if your home can be established as one, then that's wonderful. It takes a lot of work. It's not inexpensive. But consider that.
How about, I have guns in my house, and my wife, like yours, was opposed to them. And she'd say, we don't want that because I don't want the kids shooting each other in the backyard with a gun, a toy gun or whatever. They'd pick up a stick. They'd use their finger. I mean, it was, how can you navigate that for a family?
I didn't understand the question completely. Navigate the fact that you've got a lot of
firearms in the house? No, I'm saying that the kids do that naturally, either because of something they've seen in a cartoon or they've seen. Do you have any suggestions on how to talk to the child about pretending to, Indians or whatever?
I didn't understand the question fully, but I'll give you my response anyway. Okay. All right. Locks, okay.
No, all right. I don't mean the guns. I'm talking about the behavior.
The behavior related. You can't stop that.
Do you have any suggestions?
No.
On how to handle?
No. I don't, because I don't think I'm one of those that believes that boys are inherently boys, girls are inherently girls. All right. Okay. I don't care who the boy is. When he learns to pick up a stick and turn it into a gun, he will. All right. I've never seen it not happen. All right. They don't have to be taught. They come by that naturally, all right? So in that case, just teach them to be responsible about their behavior.
That's right.
That's all you can do, is teach them to be responsible. Okay.
Let's take time for possibly two more questions, and then we will have opportunity, the fellowship time, that you can also talk to Delton at that time personally if you desire. Anyone else, particularly if you've not had an opportunity for a comment and question?
Let me say this while he's looking. The main thing that I'm trying to accomplish today is, number one, try to get you to be less passive about the media issues related to your phone or related to your television. Just remember that your children are looking to you for guidance, and sometimes we think we can be quiet and they'll catch it by osmosis. It doesn't happen, all right? So be proactive. Let your children know what you think and why you think it, because they want to reason with you, and let them reason with you. Tell them why you feel a way, not just that you feel that way, but why you feel that way, and they're more likely to abide by it. I'm through. Okay.
Thank
you all very much. I appreciate all
your time. Appreciate you coming our way and sharing with us this evening. It has been rich. It has been rich. We have a lot of challenges in this. Life gives us a lot of challenges. This is an opportunity to stretch our faith in our actions and how we help our kids and grandchildren deal with media in our world today. We want to close our service with the Lord's invitation. So if there's someone here who has not put on Christ in baptism, someone who needs the prayers of the congregation in a public way, the gospel invitation is given because we believe it's a positive tradition to share the invitation of Christ, to remind us that the invitation of Christ is always open. You know, we talk about our morality and our beliefs, and both are important as Christians. But our beliefs are the foundation for our morality. So our faith in Christ is the foundation out of which morality comes. So it's not that we live moral lives and therefore we build our faith, but the faith is foundational to bring us to moral standing. And tonight, if you have not yet owned Christ in baptism, if you begin to need the prayers of the body of Christ, we invite you at the invitation of the Lord. Let's stand together and sing.